Good afternoon. It is Tuesday, March 5th, a Super Tuesday across the nation, and also 2 weeks to the day until the Ohio primary. One of the hotly watched contests in this election would be the race to against Senator Sherrod Brown. We have three Republicans this time around running. We have Bernie Marino, Frank LaRose, and Matt Dolan. And with us today to talk about his key issues is Cleveland area car dealer Bernie Marino. Bernie, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So let's jump right in. You know, you're running, this is your second time running for Ohio or for Senate from Ohio, pardon me. You're running in a much less crowded field, and this time you got the endorsement of the former president. Now, as we look at the results in states that have already held their primaries, we see Trump running a clean sweep, but there are still significant numbers of Republicans in those states backing Nikki Haley, despite her having no real path forward. And by significant, I don't mean huge numbers, but certainly statistically significant numbers. So obviously the Trump endorsement helps you with Trump supporters. So I want you to talk to the rest of the party. What's your message to GOP voters who are looking for a different path forward? Why should they support you, and how are you different from the former president?
Well, let's make it clear that in Ohio, President Trump's leading Nikki Haley by over 70 points. So what we're seeing at the presidential level is exactly what we're seeing here in Ohio, which is that there are some establishment Republicans, some of that guy called the swamp, that still want Nikki Haley and that now are realizing that they can't win. So what they're trying to do is elect two swamp creatures, Frank LaRose or Matt Dolan, to blunt President Trump's agenda in the Senate. They know that President Trump will be reelected. And so now what they want to do is do whatever they can to make sure that they block the America First agenda from being implemented. So if you like Nikki Haley, you have two good choices in Frank LaRose and Matt Dolan. But if you believe that we need outsiders, we're going to put in place the America First agenda. I'm the only candidate in this race that's going to do that. President Trump knows that, which is why he's endorsed me. This is the last gasp for the establishment Republicans in Ohio to have a path to blunt President Trump. And that's Matt Dolan and Frank LaRose.
Certainly. Okay. So on your website, you cite your number one issue as giving parents more of a say over their kids' education. Now, obviously, that sounds pretty innocuous, but some educators would point out that there are parents who want their children sheltered from certain topics that might be part of a well-rounded education. For instance, things like the history of slavery that some parents may object to. So I want to know where that line stops. I mean, what should parents be able to challenge? For instance, I mean, if a parent didn't like math, can they challenge math? Can they challenge scientific facts? Isn't it crucial to be exposed to various viewpoints in order to develop critical thinking skills, even if it means you might disagree with your parents on some topics?
Well, let's be clear. The federal government has no constitutional right to create a Department of Education, and yet they did in 1979. Every Republican has run on getting rid of the Department of Education. When we get President Trump back in office and we control the House and the Senate with real Republicans, we're going to get rid of and abolish the Department of Education. What that will do is it will put schools in the hands of the community, of the parents in that community. I don't know many people that have the view that you just outlined. Actually, I've never met any Republican that has that view. But if they do, it's about what does the majority of the parents in that local community believe. Now, what I will say is there's a fine line between what you're talking about, which is should a second, third, fourth grader be exposed to sexuality when that absolutely has no business being in school? Should these kids be indoctrinated and told them that American history is really a history of racism and that this country is fundamentally bad? As somebody who came to this country legally as a kid, I would push back hard on that. This is an exceptional nation. We need to make certain that we're teaching it the right way. But that would be what I would espouse in my local community as a parent paying property taxes to support those schools. And it shouldn't be a teachers union that's basically a money laundering operation for the Democrat Party that's in charge of our education system around the country. So my job and what I'm going to advocate for is to make certain that we absolutely get rid of the Department of Education by the end of our first year in office.
So now you mentioned the third or fourth graders taught about sexuality. You know, that again, sounds broad brush, like, you know, I don't think a lot of people would disagree about having graphic discussions with third graders. But again, where is that line? For instance, the acknowledgement. I mean, the teacher can say my husband, my wife, and if they're in a straight relationship, nobody seems to be raising any objection to that. Suppose a teacher was gay and referred to their husband or their wife. Would that be teaching them about sexuality, or is that be acknowledging that there are other people with human rights? I mean, should they be told that those people don't exist, essentially?
Oh, of course not. That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is graphic sexual content, talking about transgenderism, this idea that maybe you're not really a boy, maybe you're a girl, that you may not be sure, having conversations without parents' permission. The reality is, like I said, this is a conversation for the parents who pay property taxes to send their kids to that local public school to make that decision. I think we can all agree on that. In your community, you may have one point of view, and mine have a different point of view, but the parents ultimately should be in charge of what their kids are taught as a collective whole. The parents are the ones that appoint school board members to make those decisions. My point is simple. The federal government, bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. should have no role in that process at all.
So you just want the curriculum to be set in the classroom, certainly, but you want the local school board, locally elected, to be the ones to make those decisions.
Exactly. That shouldn't be controversial. It is controversial because they realize that the teachers unions aren't really unions to help teachers. They're there to launder money for Democrat candidates. The money goes into the teachers unions. They then funnel that money into Democrat campaigns and are indoctrinating our kids. I have four kids. I have three grandkids. I understand this issue firsthand. We've had many teachers. I'll give you my son's example. When he went to school 3 days before school started, he's a great student, great A student. He gets a letter, an email that says, "We see that you're Hispanic, so we have special counseling and tutoring available for you." That is the epitome of racism. My son knew in order to get an A in this particular class that he had to repeat the teacher's point of view, not his own point of view. That's just wrong. I was the chair of the board of Cleveland State University. I made a free speech on campus a priority. And I'm very proud that we got the top rating by the institute that follows that. We have to have a school and educators that teach kids all of the points of view, not just a very radical left-wing point of view, which is the problem we have right now.
So to be clear, you want an all-inclusive education. There's no ideas that you want banned from the classroom. It's a matter of more being taught in the classroom, essentially.
Well, and, more and ideas. Make sure it's age appropriate. Yes, I don't think kids are ready to be talk about sexuality until much older. We're talking about second graders, third graders, fourth graders with drag queen story hour. Come on, why are we doing that? These kids have no idea what that means. Why are we interjecting that kind of content into a classroom? We're in a global competitive race for talent around the world. We need to be teaching science, math, critical thinking, communications. Where does all this other nonsense fit in? You know, that's what you have my mom and a dad for, is to teach the values at home that aren't whatever that one teacher feels is some radical ideology.
So another issue that you cite on your website is you say you want to, quote, end socialism in America. Now, again, a popular talking point. I'd like to get into the specifics of what exactly that means. What programs would you cut? Are we talking Social Security and Medicare, corporate subsidies, infrastructure grants and programs? By some definitions, all of those would be considered socialism. So what is ending socialism in America?
Well, first of all, the Democrat Party is the party right now that is looking at socialism and communism, self-avowed. This idea that government is better off to tell you what to do and how to live your life than you are yourself. We're the party of freedom and liberty. Our founders understood that we should determine our own lives. But right now we have a government that's telling you can't have a gas stove. You must drive an electric vehicle, that coal and nuclear and natural gas and oil are bad, and we're going to go to windmills and solar panels, that you have basically elites in faraway capitals that know better for us. Look at what happened during COVID. During COVID, they not only told us that you had to get a vaccine, they told us that if you didn't, you were a bad human being, and they were going to do everything in their power to take your job away. You would be fired if you didn't get vaccinated. We had the government bribing kids who we now know objectively the vaccine was bad for to take a vaccine. We were shamed if we didn't wear a mask or didn't social distance when we know none of that worked. So the reality is the impulse of government is control. It's why we have distributed power in our country, why we have a constitution that's there for one reason. The constitution is there to protect us from the tyranny of government. I come from a continent in which this doesn't exist. And I understand the importance of American freedom and liberty and stay far away from these socialist communist tendencies. Unfortunately, that's not every Democrat, but that's who controls the Democrat Party today.
So that was an answer about the Democrats, but I'm asking what programs you would cut. What programs would be on the table that you consider socialist that you would cut?
Well, I talked about those. The mandates for electric cars.
Okay.
Why would we mandate that you have to buy an electric car? Why would we incentivize somebody to buy an electric vehicle over something else? How about forgiving college debt for people who went to college on the backs of the people who didn't? The idea that you're paying people to stay home. You have 8.2 million able-bodied Americans that can work, but the government's paying to subsidize them. This idea of unfiltered immigration, where we have millions and millions, almost 10 million people that have come into this country illegally that are being housed at the expense of the taxpayers. You have the government weighing in and saying, we're going to force banks and credit card companies to prohibit gun purchases because we don't like guns. You have IRS agents that are harassing law-abiding citizens. We have agencies that are changing laws that, for example, bump stocks, where they were legal, they changed an administrative law through not the legislative process, but through the executive process. All of a sudden, you're a criminal. We have the FBI investigating what they call radical Catholics, who are just moms and dads going to school board meetings. You have surveillance on American citizens right now, that hundreds of thousands of Americans are being surveilled. We are definitely heading in a direction that sounds and looks very familiar to me based on where I came from in South America.
I want to go back to one example you gave, which was incentivizing things like solar and wind power. Because one thing we notice in Ohio that strikes me, and I'm not quite sure what's behind it, but you see a lot of local communities voting to ban these operations, which I imagine you'd be in favor of. I know local control is a big thing for you. But one thing that we've noticed over the years with the shale boom is that when a company wants something like a drilling operation or a fracking well or an injection well, the locals do not have similar say. We've been to many, many meetings where locals are saying the state basically told them this is approved and they can't stop that. So do you think the locals should have more control across the board? Because right now there is government policy that would appear to only allow them to ban one thing, but the other industry is shielded from local bans.
Well, so we got two things in that conversation. Number one, I do believe in local control. The best form of government is local government, right? That's very different than socialism and communism, because what they want is complete command and control from Washington, D.C. Again, our founders understood the concept of distributed power. When it comes to solar panels and windmills, what I'm saying is that the federal government should not be incentivizing the ability for foreign companies to install Chinese-made solar panels on prime farmland, because that's what's distorting the business model. You wouldn't be able to buy 4,000 or 5,000, 6,000 acres of prime farmland to install a solar array if not for these ridiculous federal subsidies. So yes, local control, but get the government out of the business of deciding this technology is good and that technology is bad.
So if a local board of trustees wants to be able to tell the state or tell a big company that they don't want a fracking well in their community, would you then agree that the law might need to be adjusted so that they are allowed to also say no to that? Again, we've just talked to a lot of them over the years who don't necessarily want them and they're told they have to be there. That they don't have that say.
Remember, I'm running for the United States Senate, right?
Right. I certainly understand, but it's Ohio. It's Ohio law.
My job is to make certain that we follow the Constitution. We have separation of powers between the branches, but also separation of powers between what the state does and what the federal government does. Now, as a citizen, I have a point of view on state government. As a United States Senator, I'm going to follow the Constitution and look at the enumerated powers that I'm given. And as long as it's not interfering with interstate commerce, then yes, states should be able to do what they do, because that's the best form of government. You're closest to the people who you elect locally and statewide. Unfortunately, like I said, we've gone the other way, where more and more power is being shifted to Washington, D.C. And I think all of us can agree that the best way to protect freedom and liberty is what our founders knew, which is this concept of decentralized distributed power.
Now, I know we're getting to the end of the time you have, but I would be remiss if I didn't also bring up, you know, your bring up the border, which you have mentioned. Your campaign is running ads that call out Frank LaRose for comments that he had made that said it would be logistically impossible to round up and deport millions of people. So I want to know, is that what you're calling for? And if so, how would you logistically make it happen and how would you pay for that?
Yeah, let me just reiterate to you that my family, myself, I came here legally. To watch this country reward people who broke the law, who didn't follow the process. There's millions of people waiting to come to this country illegally. Why are we rewarding the people who skip the line and violate our laws? This is insane. It has to end. The way we end it is by making certain that we don't have amnesty. Now, my two opponents and Sherrod Brown believe that in amnesty. Now, they're trying to deny it now, but it's crystal clear what his comments were. So yes, like President Trump, which again is why he's endorsed me, we are going to create the largest deportation in American, modern American history. Anybody who's in this country illegally will be and must be deported. It's the only way we send a clear signal to the world. We want immigrants to come to this country. We do want immigrants to come to this country. Otherwise, this would be a very awkward Zoom from a different country. Okay. I came here legally, but we cannot allow or tolerate anybody who broke our laws, and they will be deported. The message is clear. Come to America legally on our terms. And if you don't, you will be punished and sent back to the country that you came from.
So presumably setting up that force would take logistics and money, though. So that's what I'm asking is, what is the plan to set that up and how would it be paid for?
Well, we paid $451 billion, 11 times the budget of Ohio, last year, processing and housing, feeding, and providing health care to illegal migrants. A fraction of that, $7 billion could have given every homeless vet a nice home. So we have the ability to do it, we have to do it. It's the imperative. And the message is clear to anybody in any foreign country that's thinking about violating our laws to come here. Do not come here, because if you do, you will be deported. And the people here who are here illegally, in January of 2025, you will be deported. You should start thinking about that now. Now, we know where a vast majority of these people are. They're in sanctuary cities and sanctuary states. And in that case, if the states don't want to follow federal law, then we will defund them. We'll make sure that these sanctuary cities and sanctuary states have no money, not rewarding them like Biden is doing, giving New York and Denver and Chicago and California U.S. taxpayer dollars to take care of foreigners instead of taking care of Americans. That shouldn't even be controversial. Now, again, like I said at the beginning, this election is the most consequential one of our lifetime. We understand the presidential election. President Trump, we have to make certain that he goes in office, but we also need a senator that's going to be there to support his agenda. And what you have in my two opponents is the last attempt to try to get a senator to be elected from Ohio to blunt President Trump's agenda. Those are my two opponents. In my case, I'm the one who's endorsed by President Trump because I'm going to make certain that we put in place the America First agenda and get this country back on track.
Bernie Marino, I thank you for your time. And again, the Ohio election is 2 weeks from today. Thank you very much.
Get out and vote early if you can, but make sure you vote by March 19th.
All right. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, bye.